IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 68 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl. I'm joined today by Dave and Ryan, home, as always.
Forever.
5 months.
My actual last airline ticket got canceled this week.
Also this week, we got that notice again. Two more clients canceled everything through at least the end of the calendar year. You know what? I get it. I understand that it is happening, and I buy that making big decisions is the better way to go. Not just, we'll cancel this one, and then next week another one, and then next week another one. If you're not certain this is supposed to be happening, cancel them through the end of the year. Well, make a big decision.
I do have to say, I'm still holding out hope. I got three agreements to speak in October, but I'm just really careful that the language says that, like, you know, you just get your money back if this is canceled, and that's it. And then we're done.
Exactly. The hard part of this week was that I got that notice in my Photos app that said a memory from 1 year ago today. And it was me on a golf course in Scotland and on my way off the golf course to a very nice local distillery. And I thought, man, that week was much better than this week.
I'm still wishing I had gotten stranded for 4 months in Thailand instead of my own house.
It's true. Ours was a fun trip over Labor Day weekend. We were going to go to Europe, and now we are not. But at least in that case, it was an airline cancellation, so I got everything back. Like, I got it all back completely.
Right. The good news. I can buy all the airline tickets I want because they're all refundable.
Yeah, this was a non-refundable one because it's that old. It was before all of that, so it was nice to at least get it back. And so we are comfortably sitting around. Theoretically, the baseball season starts in... two and a half weeks.
We shall see.
I believe I shall be enjoying individual games versus a season.
So baseball's one thing. Here's the question. With the basketball, do you think that they actually finish the season, or do you think that something goes wrong and they give up in the middle?
I do not believe any of them will finish any of these seasons.
I totally agree with that. And in fact, they don't agree. They don't believe it either, right? Damon Stoudemire plays for the Portland Trail Blazers, and he made a comment the other day that I thought was very accurate and surprisingly self-aware. He said, you know, you do know this audience, and you cannot imagine that many of these people with those egos are going to follow every rule. And I thought, you know, in a basketball context, I think maybe he nailed it, but in a broader social context, I think he also nailed it.
Well, you'll appreciate the takeaway, and then we'll dive in on that, because I think there is that Stockdale paradox again. You can enjoy the individual games without worrying about the arc of the season. If it happens, the Nationals Yankees will be a fantastic game. I will enjoy it because it doesn't happen very much, and if there's one more after it, that will also be enjoyable.
Well, and the good thing for you is, no matter how long it's delayed, there will be a party.
Oh, absolutely.
At some point, you get to go out and celebrate.
Exactly.
You know, way back, you know, 3 years ago, we won a championship.
Well, interestingly, so let's pivot then, because we're actually talking about consequences of what's going on in the world. And we've got a little bit of that as our first one, because we spotted an article that really, it was one of those bits where, for me, it was the, okay, that's cool tech, and was the incident why it started. We included the link here and there, where in Barcelona, they're using AI on subway trains to start understanding the impact and be able to manage a smart ventilation system, regulating air, temperature, humidity, all of that. And it first off hits those marks of, okay, this is cool technology. And it is using, you know, all of the intelligence that goes in there. It's all of the ideas of smart cities. And I wanted to hop on this and go, okay, we're starting to see real technology implementations to solve these problems. What were our big takeaways to this one?
So for me, I have to say, this is further development of the IoT, you know, this whole thing where they're looking at, like, I don't even, like, how do you measure fresh air versus stale air? Like, I don't know how you do that, but, you know, they're measuring this, which is a key component. You know, a lot of people are freaked out, and I think I'll be less freaked out if I can look up and see that there's a big green light that says there's lots of fresh air coming into this cabin. So I don't feel like I'm trapped inside of a can with 100 of my best friends.
See, and I'll take it a level deeper into the technology. So a lot of the work we've been doing in the AI and IoT into the design side of things, right? Designing smart products, not just doing the software to analyze the data that comes from them. Over at HP, they had a project, and you can search their website here. Unfortunately, I don't have the link, but you can search their website and find, and it's an illustration of an air nozzle that they were designing for one of their large implementation 3D printers. And the struggle they were having was everything was overheating. They couldn't print at the velocity that the engine could drive. They had to keep slowing down. They just couldn't get the productivity out of it. So they took the concepts of fluid dynamics. You apply AI for pattern matching and tracking and predictive. And then you design not just a curved piece of plastic, which is what it was, for this vent coming out of the machine. They designed something that looked like the inside of a dragon's tongue, right? It is bumpy. It is weird. It is of a different shape and size, not because any human would ever have designed it, but because the machine determined that's where the air was going. Now you take that and apply it to a subway system. Not only can you optimize the flow and the direction of the good air and the bad air, but you can measure and analyze performance against expectation. This is very cool technology, and it's one of those AI things that makes you go, oh, okay, cool. The machines are going to save us. Be very careful about who's driving the machine, but yeah, the machines can do things that we can't do in our own computation.
Yeah, and I definitely look at this and say, like, first off, I like the theme of actual innovation starting to address the long-term problem. COVID accelerated that, but this is a problem that would have been there, pandemic or not. Air quality in this level and being able to refresh it is something that's really fascinating. I'll include a link to this in the article. There's a detailed article that I had done some reading on about the way they do control airflow on planes. Right. You have all this whole concept that, you know, oh, you're in a trapped tube, it's all stale air. It's like, no, actually, they're refreshing the air every 3 to 4 minutes completely. And the way
it's top to bottom, so it's not flowing past the other passenger.
Exactly. That essentially your exposure to air is really only the people in those seats directly surrounding you. That's really the only people that you have to worry about. You're not worried about the people 3 rows away. You really are just the person in front of you, the person behind you, the people on the sides of you. The way they've regulated the air, and this comes from technology delivered after outbreaks in the 70s and 80s, where they looked and they understood the way that the air was not nearly as fresh. Oh, and by the way, they smoked back then. yeah. But there's it was based on those innovations that drove forward. So airplanes are not as nearly as dangerous as you might think. Now we're seeing that now thinking because we have a direct need, but we're looking at the way that's being done in all other circumstances. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, we talk post-pandemic. I'm expecting this, you know, we've now got a reason to solve the smart air conditioning, smart environment. I'm expecting a lot of rethinking of the way air handling is done in buildings, in large facilities.
Well, that's the part that I thought of is that, you know, the whole sick building syndrome, right? Like that's been a fight forever. And maybe, you know, like you said, I thought that's the next stage we need to go to is let's actually figure out how to get some fresh air. And obviously I get everybody wants to be very economical and so forth and so on. But even where I live, you know, it's, it doesn't get that cold, but I probably pay 10% extra per year because I always have a window cracked open half an inch in every room that I can in my house. I just like having it, fresh air circulate. And so
and desperation, yeah. Desperation is the mother of invention. And I think we have more than enough of that going on around right now. I think there's really good use cases in air management. And then if you go further into the concept of smart buildings and smart cities, tremendously capable technology. There's not an existing line item on the budget to purchase those things. So we need to challenge the customer and lead them to a better future. You know, take a little bit of the Steve Jobs philosophy. You know, sometimes the customer does not know what is best for them and you need to design it and then convince them. I think that's kind of where it's at right now, because a one use case in Barcelona, that's a very positive sign. Every city on the planet needs to adopt that kind of technology. And to Carl's point, inside every building that we inhabit, that's where it needs to go. And I get that that's going to be radically expensive, but take a look around and perhaps you can rationalize the prioritization of this particular topic.
You know, it's interesting, the whole concept that it's extremely expensive. You know, buildings go through refreshes every so many years. It's how LED lighting is just magically appearing. You know, a few years ago, I used to make this presentation where I would look around and say, imagine if every light bulb in this hotel was LED. And it was a couple of years before I was finally actually in a hotel where I think every light bulb was LED. I'm like, okay, I have to stop saying that now.
Well, and I just, the other thing about it is that there's also now a considerable motivation for many of these landlords to be looking at this, because, you know, I mean, I tend to favor on the side of, I think people are going to be doing more to reevaluate this more ongoing, because I think businesses are learning that we can redeploy this space in really new inventive ways. The way to make that enticing is to spend the bit up front to go ahead and get involved and do that. So I think there's a channel opportunity here. There's a business opportunity in this, because at the very minimum, you've got to be looking at the basic connectivity, the bandwidth, the network and stuff to support the smartness of the building. But I think there's also more to it in terms of actually being part of that whole solution. So I think there's a lot more to this.
So that article, actually, just in case people missed it, was about the AI piece of the air circulation on these trains. So now we're going to turn to the other side of AI, which may not be quite as positive. We have a link to a site, and it's about generating fake headshots for fake journalists who can then write fake editorials. You know, I mean, that part of this, we don't want to get political, but it is the foreign governments trying to influence the elections. You know, it falls into that. And I'm actually going to add another link to a site that's basically, it's all fake profiles. Like, you just click on it and you go next, next, next. And it's one picture after another of completely AI generated faces.
Well, you got to love a domain called thispersondoesnotexist.com.
And I wish I had registered that.
What a great one. But I mean, so, in this, we've alluded to this several times when we've talked about it. I mean, the idea of deep fakes, the idea of manipulation, this is propaganda, right? This is pure on the ability to create propaganda. That's what this is. You know, they're generated, they can do all of the bits to create fake profiles, fake information, fake pictures. You know, we're at a point where we have to be asking the smart questions to figure out the sources. They have to be validated, because, I mean, and I've warned of this before, we're moving to an element where video alone can't necessarily be trusted. You know, that changes courts, that changes the legal system, that changes the validation of information. You have to have that skeptical eye to information. Now, I don't want that to be interpreted as don't trust the media, because that's not actually the value of human curation is that element, that ability to take a skeptical eye, to do the legwork, to be a validated source. One of the things that we are learning is, I'll make the bold statement, it's like, you know, the promise of give everyone a platform will equalize. That does not mean all voices actually should be equal. There is a value to humor creation. It has a financial value. It has, at some level, you should pay for good journalism, and you need to have those trusted sources to get information from. You do need a common set of facts and information.
Well, and to, at the risk of aging myself significantly, this isn't a surprise. We knew this was coming, and we just didn't believe that it could arrive in this convincing a form quite so soon. And I think that that's just the misunderstanding of the acceleration of development. And it's something that AI is teaching us very rapidly these days. I'll go back to Max Headroom, right? In popular media, we all remember a very sketchy cartoon character who was imagined at some point in the distant future to, he was a sentient being inside of a computer, and he just was everywhere all the time. And we laughed and we joked, and he was not that good of a singer, but it was imagined, and in the world of fiction, all things are possible. And then people go, yeah, but I'm never going to have that George Jetson house. It's never going to be automated like that, nor will there be all of these imagined capabilities. Well, this one is real, and this one is coming, and you need to be the savvy consumer, right? And I believe that there will be a need for filtering and confidence levels and ways to, you know, put a stamp of approval. This person is 99% confident to be a human. This one over here, 25%. It's really smart AI, but it's either not a human or it's a really boring human, right? maybe that's another one of our evaluation techniques that needs to be explored. But you can't just sit back and say, whatever science fiction, this isn't going to happen. Yes, it is. These fake journalists are here.
So part of it is you got to figure out, how does this affect you and your clients? I personally think that it's connected to the whole idea of reputation management, right? I mean, it's at the smallest scale, some fake person can log into Yelp and give you a bad review. But at a much bigger scale, you could be trashed completely by someone who does not exist, is fake, and has 10,000 followers on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the numbers, but Facebook, takes down millions, more than 1 million fake accounts per day. Like that, it's literally a full-time job at Facebook taking down fake accounts. So at some point you got to figure out, how do your clients exist? How do you exist in a world where anybody can say anything about anything and it's just as real as anything else?
Right. Well, and you've got to put the security angle on that too, because this is a phishing attack angle. This is this is the ability to manipulate humans. You can create fake clients. They can create, versions, deep fake versions of the boss to get transfers. There's all of those elements too.
Well, and you also know, In a cell phone camera world, there is always the possibility that someone is watching everything. I agree with Carl's basic point. Reputation management is no longer just a luxury for large companies that can afford to have a staff of PR people. Everybody must be aware of that concept and then be able to manage their own reputation, position, perception in the entire world. It is easy enough to do things that are real, that will damage your reputation. We have just seen that again in the media this week. One of our peers in the channel was captured on video doing and saying something that he should not have been doing and saying, and has been roundly trashed for that. A viable, vibrant business can be undone in a day with a cell phone video. That's brutal, and we all need some media training. But imagine a world where that's not actually you saying that, and they said that was right. You saying that. That's the cruel reality.
That one, and I, the particular story is, let me remind everyone, in life, don't be a jerk, right? Like that, you can always, that goes a really long way. It's one thing to have debates over opinions and ideas. It's a whole other thing to literally be a jerk. And I know that story. I've called it out on my own show and just said, like, literally, I have no sympathy. Somebody was just a jerk, and I have absolutely no sympathy for that. Yeah. What's interesting, I want to open up a sort of a channel opportunity again here is it baffles me that nobody has gotten more successful with validated identity as like an actual thing. So if you think about the businesses like Clear, you know, that do the validation for travel, like it kind of boggles my mind that we as society have not opened up more for this opportunity of, I would pay to an organization that can help me validate, prove who I am to the world, and have other people, you know, be able to do it, and some combination of proper security, right? Multi-factor authentication with a physical key, likely bound to some biometrics, but not only biometrics, like pulling those things together. This feels like something that would be really useful and really practical.
The irony is, the closest thing we have is that you go on Twitter and you call yourself the real Dave Sobel. It's as close as we get.
But I agree with you. I think that, you know, the fact that multi-factor authentication exists and still a significant majority of end users and organizations do not have that deployed, that hurts my head. And it makes me think, okay, there's a very short throw, immediate opportunity. But I cannot imagine that multi-factor authentication is as good as we can do. I'm a big fan of biometrics technologies. And I think that there are ways that the IoT environment can make these things more connected and harder to fool than they might have been in the past. Everybody knows, you know, oh, it's facial recognition. Just showed a picture of the guy. There's 3D modeling and other things that you can do in intelligent biometrics. There has to be a concerted effort on that topic, because we are rushing headlong into a world where most of us, again, we are remote for as long as we know, and your digital identity is now your identity, you know, for everyone except for that guy in the other room.
And if only we all carried some device that would actually have a secure data portion that we could actually use for,
on the back.
What? Right.
What? Yeah,
I just feel like all of the pieces are here, and we just simply have to push for. I mean, look, onto that riff, you know, Apple's now doing the ability to start my car with my phone. I'm looking forward to the glorious day when I don't need to carry keys with me and I can use my, like, we have the pieces, and I'm not saying they're perfect, but we need to link identity verification to devices, and we need to make it secure. And remember, it may be a little bit more onerous, but the pieces are all here. I don't understand why somebody hasn't started running away with this.
Identity as a service. It is. Well, it is a product. It is a subscription. It is a professional service.
I would say if there's a front runner today, believe it or not, it's Azure Active Directory. So
yes, well, and that's what I'm saying. They've got pieces. The pieces are out there. It's pulling it together.
Start where you are. Use what you know.
So final topic, we want to talk about again, life after the pandemic, and we want to revisit. We've talked about it before, but you know, it's even more in the news today than it was a week ago. Self-regulation of social media, and how it's going to be different, because now TikTok is all the talk. But at the same time, as we get closer to the election, you have fights between Twitter and Facebook, and what's real and what's not, and what's to be censored, and who does the censoring. And we had a discussion about Facebook having this this grand Department of Justice. Whatever happened to that? Did it just disappear?
No, nope, yes. they're still working, theoretically working on it. I think more interestingly, they failed their own civil rights audit. They hired their own auditors. They went through an audit to understand the power of speech and failed. their own audit. Came out this particular week, and what was notable was they've actually talked about the fact that what they're doing, this thought of allowing any kind of speech, is actually creating disproportionate levels of power, where if you allow politicians, for example, to say anything they want because they have larger megaphones that actually can amplify and be a much more powerful force against those in opposition, that it's not good to just have anything be able to be said, because those in power have disproportionate ability to squelch others. It's and you create this protected class, because by allowing politicians to say anything they want but not necessarily otherwise, they're actually creating this weird dynamic. We really are coming to this point of this reckoning of what I think these pieces are. And I'll add the little piece of that, if you guys hadn't seen, there's now evidence that Twitter is working on a subscription model version of it. I think I'd speculated that this might be coming. There's job listings that specifically show a team working on subscription for this. We really are going to have this. For my quick answer is, self-regulation is not working at its current level, and there's just clearly too big, and we need to step in. Why is there not a new social media network in a long period of time? Because it's too difficult to step into that space.
I would just throw this out, and then I'll let Ryan jump in. But I used to teach political science at the college level, and I used to always tell people, the only speech that needs to be protected is offensive speech. Inoffensive speech, nobody cares, right? At the end of the day, if free speech means anything, it means you get to say whatever you want. And that's not just an opinion. You get to lie. you right. get to tell things that are not true, and you get to mislead people. That's part of free speech. Now, I'm not saying it's a good part, but it is the part that needs to be protected.
Well, but then again, to follow your logic exactly, you have the freedom to speak. You do not have the freedom from the consequences of the things that you speak.
True enough.
If there is backlash, if there is some form of punishment, if there is just people saying, you're gross, I don't want to listen to you anymore,
right.
That's life, and these are the natural consequences. I think I've always been a skeptic of self-regulation in this industry. Well, let me say broader. In most industries, I think that we are much more motivated by shareholder interest than we are by our broader social responsibilities. And therefore, we will always push the boundaries. Commercially and in a capitalist sense, I got no problem with that, as long as you're not doing harm with your desire to maximize your economic return. But that's precisely why you need to have a referee who goes, hey, I don't think you're in bounds anymore, even though you might think you are in bounds right now. There needs to be that kind of a voice. But if you take that inside the social media industry, when you multiply the size and the scope and the impact that they have by billions of users, plus fake accounts and automated bots and all of the things that are going on, plus the underlying intention to cause the chaos that they are causing, I have absolutely zero confidence in their ability to self-regulate. And when they announced their own audit, I was like, pshaw, of course this won't happen. And when they failed their own audit, I was like, man, you people are so not focused on even putting a good face on it anymore. You can't even fake your own audit. Come on, people.
It may be that they're not only they're too big to regulate, but they're too big to self-regulate.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And to Dave's point, it needs to have a reckoning, because it has, for positive or negative, tremendous influence in our environment. I think it could and should be a force for good. I think it's entertaining. I think it is connecting fiber among the disconnected humans. I think that the positives of social media are very extensive, as long as the jerks don't get in control of the process and we can actually have a space where you're not going to be attacked all the time. Now, I don't disagree with anybody's right to disagree. you may say what you want and I may disagree and you may disagree with me. That's awesome. Let's have a conversation. There once was a point in our industry. You guys know all the folks who were on this several years ago. There was an attempt to have an online conversation back around the previous election cycle to say, let's just speak. Let's just, like, we're intelligent people. Let's have a conversation. I think it lasted a couple of months until it devolved into a gutter fight and it went away. And you know what? That was, nobody had a commercial motive in that. There was literally nobody being paid or paying to participate. It was strictly voluntary and it still fell off the edge. I think we need to have a way to create the positives without allowing the rampant use of the negatives to squelch all the voices.
Yep, it's very true. And you have to have a way of there has to be just some moderation. There has to be some level of that. I mean, you've got to ensure that, you know, that you're not so amplifying extreme voices that it does cause that just incredible disparity and damage, and just real damage.
That is interesting. So sadly, we're out of time, but I wonder if the next algorithm is going to be to diminish the voice power of the extremes and let the people in the middle talk. Even though most of the people in the middle, they don't want to talk. They want to watch. And it's not very interesting to watch people having rational discussions with one another.
Well, hey, hopefully they disagree a little bit. Our listeners are listening to us try and have rational conversations with each other. I mean, at least
but
think
we're not on video, see? So we're just on audio.
Not unless we do it live.
And we would be happy to do that if anyone would be happy to watch.
Exactly. Yes. Very good. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. That will do it for episode 68 of the Killing It Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It Podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.